Welcome to Curious FM. In today's episode, I would like to continue introducing some language and introduce a concept to you, something that I really believe that if we kind of get on the same ground and on the same understanding and the same familiarity level with some of these concepts and ideas, we can then move on to discuss things that are a little bit more complex and maybe add a little bit of nuance and color to some of our conversations. So today I want to talk about what marketing is. I think a lot of us have an understanding of marketing. It's not that difficult of a concept. Say you develop a product. The way to sell that product is to tell people about it. That's marketing in its very simplest basis form. But if any of you have been to business school or regular school maybe and taken a marketing class, I think there's a subtle distinction here that you learn at the very beginning, which is that marketing is actually the act of breaking up and creating a market, identifying a market. And in a market, which is a collection of people, you are identifying an opportunity. At the risk of getting even more pedantic and academic, we can further define a market as a collection of people or organizations with needs or wants and the ability and willingness to buy a product, a specific product. So if marketing is based on communicating to this desired target, this mass of people that you want to tell about your product, what do you say to them? Therein lies, I think, the biggest challenge that people have is they don't know what to say to the right people to get them to buy their product, okay? So the success of any business or consumer product then depends, at least in part, on the market's ability to distinguish one product from another. Now, this is an incredibly important concept. Give me a few minutes here, and I'll really flesh this out for you to paint a little bit of color on some of the nuance. Before I begin, this stuff is not just for marketers. This is for people that maybe view themselves as minimalists, people that want to understand the urges and the forces that act upon them to buy certain products, things that they didn't expect to buy, you know, with impulse purchases or convenience purchases, or they want to understand more about how this attention economy might be monetized and motivated based on some of these factors that they didn't really understand, which primarily have to deal with how we buy products. So at the top level, the very most basic fundamental truth in marketing is that purchases are made based on perceived value. So before a customer purchases a product, they generally don't have the ability to engage with it, and it doesn't have the ability to improve their life. So we don't really buy products. What we buy are promises, okay? So there are two different ways that we derive value from a product. We might be looking for something called utilitarian value, which basically means that a product or a service helps me solve a product, you know, problem or a task, and has some type of utility for me. Or we might buy a product based on something called hedonic value, which is when the product acts as an end in itself rather than a means to an end. For example, if you go to a nice steakhouse, that could be a combination of both utilitarian value and hedonic value. Yes, you need to eat, so you get some utility out of that, but you don't exactly need to eat a $50 steak and have a cocktail before dinner and that type of thing. Those are more in the hedonic camp. You're not always going to be cognizant and aware of what type of value you're looking to get from a product, or even why you might be interested in a product. And this is expected, okay? Customers don't always know why they buy something. However, academia thinks they know. And this comes from something called the consumer decision-making process, which is basically why we think purchases happen. So I'm going to kind of read through this list and add a little bit of color to each of these steps. and hopefully, you know, help us understand what this all means. So first, you have a needs recognition. So you understand your brain recognizes that you need something, and that arises as a result of an imbalance between an actual and a desired state. Okay. So that means that you want something to change. You want something to be different than it currently is. Maybe you want to own something that you don't. You want to be able to do something that you can't, or you want to be something that you aren't. Okay. So that recognition of need is triggered by an external or an internal stimulus. So YouTube video with some product placement would be an external stimulus. Maybe you have feelings of hunger. You have a hunger pang, and that would be an internal stimulus. The imbalance that you feel internally needs to be strong enough that you cross the want-got gap, which is the term for not an Ariana Grande song, but rather the motivation behind a purchase. You have to be sufficiently motivated to complete the purchasing process. So we begin a search, you know, we decide we want to actually complete this process. We begin a search for a solution internally. So, you know, we call upon our memory. And we try to think if we can identify any solutions or we've used anything in the past, and then we move to external resources. For things that are not very risky and really simple and commoditized, you know, in some way, we don't really have that much of an intensive, you know, research process. Generally, the risk of the purchase correlates with how far and how wide our external search goes. So it's expected that we might spend more time, resources, and effort on researching what car we might get than researching which flavor of Pop-Tarts we want at the grocery store. So after we collect the information that we need, we create something called an evoked set, which is a group of the brands or products that we're currently considering. Now, this right here is, in my personal opinion, extremely important and widely overlooked and not well understood by people that maybe have learned marketing through doing as opposed to, you know, going in through an academic environment, which was me. Okay, so I have been doing marketing for a long time. I've marketed products. I've built products. I've been consulting as a marketer. I've done a lot of things in marketing, and I've never really understood this. I've always understood, you know, that there's positioning and there's market perception, product perception and product line and brand and all these different things, and they intermingle and intertwine to create kind of some of the results that you get from your marketing mix. What I didn't understand was that this process of searching for a solution and then arriving at things that might already be in your mind, and from external sources, you create what's called the evoked set. So once we have an evoked set, which is a fancy way of saying these are all the solutions that we were able to brainstorm and come up with, and we have this list of potential products or services or whatever that we might buy, we start to kind of iterate through them and evaluate them. So we will often choose one attribute. Okay, something that we find to be really important, and it is, okay, but it's pretty common that most of the potentials in the evoke set will share this attribute, but the thing is, what it lets us do is it lets us eliminate the rest of the products without that attribute, okay? So we'll do this process over and over again until we arrive at what we think is the best solution. So this implies to me something that when I was talking about, this is not well understood. This is something that I never know to do. So when you introduce a new product to market, it may be highly advantageous for you to look at the other products that exist in the market and make sure that once you become part of this evoke set, that you generally compare pretty well to the other products. And that might mean becoming a composite or an average type of product, but maybe that would help with this self-selection process. Now, I don't think you should go out there and just be a copycat and build everything that all the other products do. That doesn't seem to be the way through this, because if, you know, the other adage is, if everyone's your customer, then no one's your customer. And you can't, you have to build a product for a specific group of people and be specific about what you're doing, or at least that's what I believe. So the criteria here that people use that they might, you know, gather and then judge you by. So this is set by the category that the consumer puts you in. So you need to make sure you're aware of that. I think that's another lever that you can pull, so to speak, is to say that, yes, we're a margarine company, but we're actually should be compared to butter as compared to, you know, as opposed to judged by other margarines. I think this is also a very widely touted piece of startup advice, is try to be a category of one. You know, they say that it's better to be first than it is to be best, and it's better to be to create a new category than it is to be another has-been or another also-ran in an existing category. So to kind of recap, you know, this is how we think about how the purchasing process works and how people might consider products and what is actually happening when we market. Now, we didn't say a whole lot about how to actually do these things, tips and tricks for, you know, convincing prospects or potential customers to buy our product. We didn't really speak to that at all. But what we did talk about are some of the fundamentals behind how this works. Now, a lot of people think that marketing stops here. And I think the internet is, you know, the advice you get on the internet anyway is moving more towards the truth here. But you got to remember that marketing doesn't end here. A big part of marketing has to do with post-purchase, post-sales support. So customer service can be a key differentiating factor, can be incredibly important, especially in the age of social media. And big businesses like Zappos and Amazon and so on have been built, you know, predicated on the idea of providing superior customer service and having a customer orientation to their business. That's marketing. Influences word of mouth, you know, all types of stuff. But here's something that I don't think that is talked about very much, and this is something that I didn't quite realize until, you know, I read it in a textbook somewhere, was that post-purchase research is incredibly important. And this is a step that I think, you know, in terms of academia, they are trying to add to the customer decision journey as a, you know, a secondary or a post-purchase step. And what this basically says is that customers, you know, will buy a product, and then you need to do something to minimize cognitive dissonance. So when we buy a product, sometimes we will start feeling insecure about our decision, about our choice. We might think that we spent too much money. Maybe it's something we didn't need. Maybe a friend has one and it's a different one than the one that we bought. Well, maybe they're right. Maybe we bought the wrong one. Let's use an example of somebody buying a skincare product. After you buy a skincare product, it's pretty likely that you're going to go into Google or YouTube or Pinterest or whatever, and you're going to search for information and look at other people that are using that product and try to see what other people are saying about it. Speaking from a personal level, I use Reddit a lot for this. I do find myself doing this, you know, cognitive dissonance minimizing process. You know, I buy a new phone, for example. I say I switch over to Android for a couple of months. I'll immediately go to Reddit and I'll go to our Android, you know, or whatever, and I'll try to see what some of the pro tips are and to maybe reinforce and validate the opinion that I thought that I had in buying that product. You want to feel good about the things that you buy. And this extends a little bit. Just to say one more quick thing about the self-concept. From this, we can also intuit that we perceive ourselves as distinct from an ideal. Okay. We kind of all aspire to be something. We all aspire to that ideal. And we represent that with products and purchase choices a lot of the time. But one thing for marketers to note, and one thing for you to note, even if you're not a marketer, is that we rarely buy products that bring us further away from that ideal. And that is kind of an important concept to me. That's something that's fundamental to understand is, and that maybe brings in and wraps all this up with a nice little bow on top, is that that internal change that we seek when we buy new products, that change that we want, that delta, is generally because we want to be something that we're not in some way, shape, or form, or capable of something that we currently aren't. I think that'll do it for this week and introduce that concept in a way that I'm happy with. I apologize if this is a little bit too academic. Some things do benefit from a more concise, perhaps academic approach, perhaps a textbook style. I just like to be clear and reference solid, you know, structured and widely accepted concepts, you know, to build some of the framework that we need to have our future discussions. So onward. As always, official show notes are available over at curious.fm. And you can get in touch with me over on Twitter at Terry Godier, TerryGodier, or through email show@curious.fm.